This is special coverage from NPR News on today's terrorist attacks. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Noah Adams. To bring us up to date on the extent of the deaths and the injuries, we turn now to NPR's Rick Carr, who is in New York. Rick, can we put any number now, this evening, on the number of possible dead and injured in New York and also in Washington at the Pentagon and in the airplane crash in Pennsylvania?
Well, I'll start with the airplanes, Noah. We know that there were 266 people in total on those four aircraft. The first aircraft to hit the World Trade Center was American Airlines Flight 11. It was a Boeing 767. There were 92 people aboard. The second aircraft to hit was United Airlines Flight 175, again a 767, 65 people on board. In Washington, the plane that hit the Pentagon was American Airlines Flight 77. It's a 757, and there were 64 people aboard, and the downed plane in Pennsylvania was United Airlines Flight 93, and it had 45 people aboard.
Now, we're hearing that this evening late that hundreds of firefighters and police who were sent early to the World Trade Center in New York are now missing, and entire companies of firefighters.
That's right. A spokesperson for the Firefighters Union here in New York has said that of the 400 firefighters who are on the scene, about half of them are now missing. He said that there are whole companies missing, there are chiefs missing. Nobody's really certain how many people are missing in the wreckage, whether it's firefighters, police, or indeed people who were in the World Trade Center buildings, because the dust is so thick down there. The destruction is so complete. There was a report that moved on the wires this afternoon that indicated that some people believe that emergency vehicles were actually driving over corpses that were buried in dust. There was just no way to tell how many people were there. There are reports now in New York that crews have gone into the area and are starting to look for survivors and for corpses.
We have been hearing throughout the afternoon the figure thousands who could be dead in the World Trade Tower bombing. What's your latest information?
The latest information is pretty much what we've been hearing all day long. It's educated guesswork at this point how many people there are. The New York Police Department has been saying this afternoon they estimate 10,000 or so people may have died in the explosions and in the collapse of the World Trade Center buildings. There are just too many questions right now about how many people had arrived. About more than 40,000 people work in those buildings. We don't know how many people had arrived at work. We don't know how many of them turned away when they saw the first explosion. We don't know how many of them successfully got out of the building after the first plane struck. We just don't know, and we won't really know until families around New York get a sense of who's actually returned home, the hospitals can coordinate information, and indeed that those crews can get in there and start trying to find any human remains that might be there.
And how are the hospitals dealing with this tragedy?
Well, there are 170 hospitals in New York City. They've all been put into action to take care of the wounded. We don't really have a sense of how many people there are in total that have been admitted to the hospitals, 600 or so as of this afternoon. Hospitals are reporting that 10 to 20% of those who are coming in are in critical condition, most of them suffering from cuts, scrapes, burns, and smoke and dust inhalation. The smoke and dust was just incredible, pouring over lower Manhattan and into Brooklyn, where indeed it felt like it was snowing for much of the afternoon.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, Noah.
NPR's Rick Carr talking with us from New York.
With the death toll mounting from today's attacks, questions are mounting about who is responsible and when and how the U.S. might retaliate. We're joined now by Strobe Talbott, who was Deputy Secretary of State in the Clinton administration. Strobe Talbott, how does the United States go about determining who did this?
Quickly and carefully, without jumping to conclusions, but when we reach hard-headed judgments and we're sure of them, we have to act.
Well, act means many things. It could mean an international criminal investigation, as in the bombing at Khobar Towers in Saudi Arabia, or it could mean military retaliation. Would you assume at least military retaliation?
Yes, as long as we're sure that, first of all, the people we're retaliating against are indeed responsible, and second, that the retaliation will have a deterrent effect in the future. I mean, there is no question what the motive of the terrorists is here. It's to polarize. It's worse is better. It's to try to drive the United States either into its shell, which we cannot allow to happen, or to drive the United States into kind of lashing out in a way that will exacerbate exactly the sorts of tensions that terrorism feeds on. and we have to avoid both of those.
I mean, realistically speaking, can U.S. intelligence services figure out who did this without relying heavily on the intelligence services and police forces of countries in, say, the Middle East?
We have to look at this, as so many people have said during the course of the day, as an act of war, and we have to approach it as a kind of war. But we have to do it as we have done with wars in the past, as the leader of an alliance, the leader of a coalition of the civilized world. And we have to make sure that our coalition partners and our allies include not only the Europeans, but also, and by the way, the Russians, who for geographical and other reasons presumably have both interests and influence here, but also on the moderate Arab states.
I mean, what you're describing is a lot closer to what President George Bush the Elder organized in response to the invasion of Kuwait than, say, the attacks that followed the bombings of the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania during the Clinton administration.
Well, all of us who lived through the acts of terrorism during the Clinton administration have thought a lot during the day about the parallels there and also the differences. This is, for a number of reasons, different. In magnitude. In those earlier cases, we did rely, by the way, a lot on international cooperation, but that's going to be especially important now, given the essential fact here, Robert, which is that while we've all seen this as an attack on America, it's also an attack on the rest of the world. The consequences of what's happened today are going to be devastating for the international economy. Unless we can all gather together and put this into some kind of perspective and bring it under control. And that can only be done through multilateral international action led by the United States.
There's been much talk of suspicions that Osama bin Laden is behind all this. If he isn't, who else might be? Who's capable of doing such
a
thing?
Well, he obviously belongs high on the list of suspects for all sorts of reasons. And I can only speak here on the basis of what's been in the public eye today, which has been horrifying. It looks as though the degree of coordination here has to have something more than a non-governmental or individual actor or group behind it. But that's just a judgment that so many of us feel in our gut watching it. We can't rule anything out. We certainly have to take account of the possibility that there are states, that is, that the fault for this lies in national capitals as well as with terrorist organizations.
Strobe Talbott, thank you very much for talking with us. Strobe Talbott, who was Deputy Secretary of State in the Clinton administration and is now Director of the Center for the Study of Globalization at Yale University in New Haven.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of today's tragic events in New York City and here in Washington, D.C. I'm Noah Adams with colleagues Linda Wertheimer in Washington, Robert Siegel in New York. President Bush is expected to address the nation in about a minute. Earlier today, President Bush said, "Freedom has been attacked. Freedom will be defended."
NPR's White House correspondent Don Gagne is here as well. Don, do you expect the president to talk about some kind of response?
We expect him to talk about the fact that there will be a response and that the U.S. is committed and confident that it will find who is responsible and that there will be a response. But in terms of a specific response, they're still assessing the intelligence information they're receiving at this point.
We'll go immediately to the president as soon as he begins to speak. But first of all, could you tell us where he's been? Today.
He has been in Florida. He started his day, went to an air base in Louisiana, all as part of a precautionary move. He ended up in Nebraska outside Omaha at the Strategic Air Command before this evening, 7 o'clock, coming back to the White House, landing on the South Lawn and preparing for these remarks tonight.
The president will be speaking from the White House. As Don... Here is the president.
Good evening. Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts. The victims were in airplanes or in their offices, secretaries, businessmen and women, military and federal workers, moms and dads, friends and neighbors. Thousands of lives were suddenly ended by evil, despicable acts of terror. The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings, fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger. These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve. America was targeted for attack because we're the brightest beacon for freedom and opportunity in the world, and no one will keep that light from shining. Today, our nation saw evil, the very worst of human nature, and we responded with the best of America, with the daring of our rescue workers, with the caring for strangers and neighbors who came to give blood and help in any way they could. Immediately following the first attack, I implemented our government's emergency response plans. Our military is powerful, and it's prepared. Our emergency teams are working in New York City and Washington, D.C. to help with local rescue efforts. Our first priority is to get help to those who have been injured and to take every precaution to protect our citizens at home and around the world from further attacks. The functions of our government continue without interruption. Federal agencies in Washington, which had to be evacuated today, are reopening for essential personnel tonight and will be open for business tomorrow. Our financial institutions remain strong, and the American economy will be open for business as well. The search is underway for those who are behind these evil acts. I've directed the full resources of our intelligence and law enforcement communities to find those responsible and to bring them to justice. We will make no distinction between the terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them. I appreciate so very much the members of Congress who have joined me in strongly condemning these attacks. And on behalf of the American people, I thank the many world leaders who have called to offer their condolences and assistance. America and our friends and allies join with all those who want peace and security in the world. And we stand together to win the war against terrorism. Tonight, I ask for your prayers for all those who grieve, for the children whose worlds have been shattered, for all whose sense of safety and security has been threatened. And I pray they will be comforted by a power greater than any of us, spoken through the ages in Psalm 23. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. This is a day when all Americans from every walk of life unite in our resolve for justice and peace. America has stood down enemies before, and we will do so this time. None of us will ever forget this day, yet we go forward to defend freedom and all that is good and just in our world. Thank you, good night, and God bless America.
President George Bush speaking from the White House this evening after a day which has seen the worst terrorist attacks in history occur in the United States, the World Trade Center destroyed, the Pentagon, part of the Pentagon destroyed. Don Gagne is here with us in the studio. Don, the president set this up as a conflict between good and evil. And in particularly in biblical terms, talking about the valley of the shadow of death. He talked about terrorism as a war and said that the United States would win the war against terrorism. He said that the United States has stood down enemies before. Very sort of militant kinds of prose from the president, but no plan, no specifics.
No specifics, because they don't feel prepared at all to offer any specifics yet. They are getting intelligence information. There are intercepted phone calls. They're getting intelligence reports of phone calls saying targets have been hit. But Ari Fleischer today, the president's press secretary, talking on Air Force One on the way back to Washington from Nebraska, told reporters that they have to be very careful that the information they have is accurate before any response is taken. But again, the president was attempting to show that once they come to that point, once there is a degree of certainty that that there will indeed be a very strong response. And he made the point tonight that no distinction between the terrorists, he said, who committed these acts and those who harbored them will be made. There will be no distinction, so they can all expect a response.
The president appeared to wish to reassure the American people that the government would be open for business, that financial institutions would remain strong.
The American economy will be open for business tomorrow. That was the second part of this speech, that the American way of life is not threatened, that life goes on here, that we will not retreat.
Don, it's hard to say how any administration could prepare for a day like this, but do you have the feeling that there was a confident reaction from the beginning, from the Bush White House? He was in several different places. He's come a little bit late to Washington to make this address tonight. What do you think?
It's hard to say. They were thrown by this like the rest of the country. He did make the point tonight that when they got the first report that the first plane had crashed into the one tower of the World Trade Center, that they put the emergency procedures into effect. But then, and perhaps it's the nature of something like this, the president was out of sight and out of touch for a good bit of the day, except for a very, very short statements that he made, one from Louisiana, one earlier in the day, very brief, from Florida. The White House said that was all necessary as part of the caution that has to be taken while the national security team assesses the situation and the real threats. But they did feel compelled to have him make this national broadcast tonight.
Our colleague Robert Siegel is standing by in New York. Robert?
I was just, first of all, Don, remarking on that statement by the president that we'll make no distinction between terrorists who did this and those who harbor them. Do we assume that means not only bands of terrorists, but nations where they have bases?
He didn't go into any specifics, but I think that is a reasonable assumption to make if they feel they have the evidence drawing those kinds of connections. I think we may indeed see responses against nations.
Let's turn now to our diplomatic correspondent, Mike Schuster. Mike Schuster, if indeed, as the president says, the U.S. military is powerful and it is prepared and will make no distinction between terrorists who did this and those who harbor them, which nations might be worried about that at this point?
Well, obviously, Afghanistan, Robert, is number one on the list because that's where Osama bin Laden lives, and that's where his organization, Al-Qaeda, maintains training camps. And it's under intense scrutiny by U.S. Satellite sensors, surveillance satellites, and other sensors that can pick up communications. Iraq would also be on that list. I'm not sure that Iraq would necessarily be second, but Iraq would be on that list, given at least some signals and hints about Iraqi involvement in the previous World Trade Center bombing. Sudan could be on that list. Sudan was hit by an American cruise missile attack in 1998, along with Afghanistan, when the two bombings occurred at U.S. embassies in Nairobi, Kenya, and in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. The list is not very large, Robert. It's quite small, given where suspicion has fallen. I'm not sure that there are any other nations beyond that.
You mentioned the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. In the end, do we know what countries were involved in that act of terrorism?
No. In fact, The authorities, when they prosecuted the four and ultimately six people for that bombing, they didn't attempt to link them to nations. There were a number of terrorism experts that did feel that the Iraqi hand was perceived in that, but the Clinton administration chose not to make that connection. Over the 8 years since the first World Trade Center bombing, the view has pretty much stayed the same, that bin Laden and before him the World Trade Center bombers and Ramzi Youssef, who was believed to be the mastermind of that bombing and who's in prison now in the United States, were not acting with state sponsorship, that they were acting on their own. And the focus on bin Laden has really intensified that view, that this has been something that this has been a phenomenon that bin Laden and other independent actors have really pressed forward. I think that because of the details and the extraordinary coordination and synchronization of these acts today, it's going to push U.S. officials to focus much more on the possibility that there was state sponsorship for these acts.
Yes, it would seem that the great difference between what happened today and what happened either at the U.S. embassies or at the World Trade Center in 93 or at Khobar Towers in Saudi Arabia is that these weren't trucks full of bombs that pull up in front of the in front of a building, but hijackings that involved people obviously capable of, first of all, penetrating airport security in some way with some sort of weapons, it seems, and then piloting the aircraft into their targets. Very sophisticated stuff.
It certainly seems very sophisticated, but the number of people who actually carried out these operations today could still be small. That's what terrorism experts caution. And we don't have any information about how they got on the plane with weapons that they could then commandeer the planes, whether there were arms involved or were explosives involved. So terrorism experts still caution that without further information that gives us a clearer picture of how this was done today, an ultimate conclusion can't be drawn.
It would seem from the experience of the 1993 explosion that an ultimate conclusion might not be drawn 10 years from now.
That's possible, although there was an investigation and there was a trial and there was a lot of information. And then when Ramzi Youssef was essentially kidnapped by U.S. agents from Pakistan and brought to the United States, U.S. authorities have said that he bragged about the operation and gave a good deal of detail about how he masterminded and how his people carried out the first bombing of the World Trade Center. There was also a good deal of information that's emerged about the, particularly at the trial this year, about the embassy bombings in Africa. And so I think U.S. officials believe that they will learn a great deal more about what took place today.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome, Robert.
Mike Schuster, NPR's diplomatic correspondent.
John Baracchini is with us. He is the executive director of the Washington office of the Monterey Institute. He's writing a book about Osama bin Laden. He is the author of a report on the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993. Mr. Baracchini, first of all, what do you think about the notion that this act was so sophisticated that it might actually have been state-sponsored?
I think it's a good point, and it's worth thinking about. We would have to say, however, that the World Trade Center bombing of 93 was a sophisticated act, or that the bombings of the embassies in two different countries, one right after another in 1998, was a sophisticated operation. There's no indication in either of those instances that states were party to that, but nothing should be ruled out at this moment.
Let's go back to what the president said. Was there anything that you felt was missing from that statement? Did you expect to hear something about retaliation or some presidential act?
I think the president and indeed other cabinet officials are striking just the right tone at this moment. Don't incite panic. Don't tip all the cards about what we might do next. Don't rule out any tools that might be in our counterterrorism toolbox. So I think they're doing pretty well under what are unprecedented circumstances.
The difficulty of not knowing what happened and not knowing who caused it leaves the United States in a sort of an impotent position, though, doesn't it, to have had something so dreadful happen and to have no response.
It leaves us impotent if we only think about one tool that is striking back. And indeed, that's a feeling that many Americans, I'm sure, feel this evening. This is tragic beyond imagination, and many people are angry. But I think the president and his other officials are showing the right approach. That is, we will pick our time, we will use a variety of tools, some of them diplomatic, some of them law enforcement, some of them military, some of them things that we can do on our own here in this on our own territory, improving our security at our borders, improving the air traffic security system. There are a number of things that we can do that don't involve kissing somebody with a cruise missile.
The president said that the United States will win the war against terrorism. He talked about it as a war. Do you think, I mean, did you see this as some sort of response to the notion that, what has happened was very close to an act of war?
That's the one aspect of the president's statement that I found unfortunate. If this is al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, I think they do perceive it as a war, a clash of civilizations in which they are waging a war against us. But this is not a war for us. This is not like Pearl Harbor. This was a terrorist incident. We're going to reconstitute the working ability of the Pentagon. We're going to get things back together in New York City. And we're not engaged in a war. The moment we describe it as a war, asymmetric in character, we're beginning to give Osama bin Laden or whoever this was more power than they really deserve to have. So I think we want to continue to treat this not as a war, but as a terrorist incident, even though the perpetrators of this may see it as a war. We don't want to give them that advantage.
John Baracchini, thank you very much for coming in. John Baracchini is the executive director of the Washington office of the Monterey Institute. He is writing a book about Osama bin Laden.
We'll be back in a moment with more coverage of today's attacks on New York and Washington, D.C. from NPR News. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Linda Wertheimer. We've asked Mr. John Baracchini to stay with us for just a few more minutes. John Baracchini is executive director of the Washington office of the Monterey Institute, and he studied acts of terror, including the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. Let me just ask you, if you think you know why this happened, I mean, what would be the motive behind such an incredibly serious and large attack against the United States?
It's hard to know what the motive is. And indeed, if we speculate about what the motive is, we're essentially projecting our thinking as to what we think the terrorists are thinking. It's useful to do, but let's recognize the limitations of it. With suicide bombers, it's rare that you get a chance to actually interview them, and we won't get a chance to interview these people. But in previous attacks, and particularly in the World Trade Center bombing, statements that the perpetrators of these crimes made at the end of their trial, some of the things they wrote do give us some idea of what some of the motivations would be, and it's not a single thing. And it's not accurate to say it's all wrapped in religion. It's a variety of things. It's not only an attempt to inflict pain on the United States for its support of Israel. It's not only an attempt to revenge deaths that they feel may have resulted in the Middle East. It's also an attempt to assert their dominance as they see it over Americans. And it affirms who they are. Their sense of powerlessness they overcome by holding the lives of thousands of people in their hands and then crushing them.
In 1993, the first World Trade Center bombing, 6 people died, 1,000 were wounded, and that was bad enough. This could be horrific compared to that. The motive here could be to kill that number of people or to simply see those World Trade Towers topple.
Both. In 1993, Ramzi Youssef did say that he wanted to kill thousands. And in fact, one of the other co-conspirators in that bombing was disappointed that not more people died. This is really a mass casualty attack, and we should focus on that part of the emerging new terrorist threat, that these are people who want to inflict lots of indiscriminate, innocent casualties.
But not with very, but the means were not as sophisticated as we had feared they might be. Not biological warfare, not nuclear weapons, relatively old-fashioned forms of terrorism, hijacking a plane, a suicide bombing.
Maybe the unusual things that we've been focused on in terms of exotic weapons were not in the right weapons category. These people used an unorthodox way to render mass casualties with a conventional weapon, an airplane.
Thanks very much. John Barachini, Executive Director of the Washington Office of the Monterey Institute.
This week on Capitol Hill was supposed to be a time to debate the defense budget. Instead, this morning the Capitol was evacuated and closed down. Lawmakers wondered what the carnage of the day says about America's intelligence capabilities. NPR's Peter Overby reports.
At mid-morning, there was a stunned calm on Capitol Hill. Two Republican senators and a few staff members stood across the street from the evacuated Capitol and listened to the radio. Chuck Hagel of Nebraska is a Vietnam veteran on the Foreign Relations Committee. John Warner is a World War II vet and ranking Republican on the Armed Services Committee. First, Senator Hagel.
This country has been changed forevermore. This is the second Pearl Harbor. It's that serious. When you think about what has happened here today, it's as serious as what happened at Pearl Harbor. Different kind of an enemy, different time. This is an attack on America.
It's a carefully coordinated attack. It's remarkable, the volume of these things and the I don't know, somehow the intelligence community, we'll have to see.
As concerned as Warner might be, he and most other members of Congress are in no rush to second-guess America's intelligence network. A few Democrats pointed out, quietly, that they want to shift some $800 million from Star Wars missile defense to anti-terrorism work. That was supposed to be debated in a committee meeting this morning. But conservative Republican Dana Rohrabacher of California lashed out at what he called the biggest intelligence failure of his lifetime. He blamed the administration of former President Bill Clinton.
We should do a clean sweep. We've got to hold those people who hold cushy jobs in the senior executive level of our well-paid intelligence operations, to sweep them away and do some major reform. We can't just let this get away by saying, oh, there's nothing we could have done. There's a lot we could have done to prevent this, and it's a disgrace that our country hasn't done it.
But Rohrabacher was out on a limb. More typical was Arizona Republican John Kyle on the Senate Intelligence Committee. Like President Bush and many other lawmakers, he talked about protecting the homeland.
It is very unfortunate but true that it takes incidents like this to focus people's attention on the fact that we've got a big job to do in this country, and that's to protect our homeland. A lot of voices have been saying that, but because we appear to be safe and secure, we have other priorities. We need to increase our spending on intelligence. We need to increase our intelligence gathering and an analytical capability. We need to increase our ability to infiltrate terrorist organizations. And then we need to have better plans on how to deal with attacks once they occur. It's my hope that this incident, if there's anything good that comes out of us, it will be that it will refocus our attention on this first priority.
For members of Congress, the first priority today was to demonstrate that the congressional branch of government might have been temporarily out of its building, but it isn't out of business. As the tragedy of the day sinks in, the debate over intelligence operations has just begun. Peter Overby, NPR News, the Capitol.
And to review, President George W. Bush spoke from the Oval Office this evening to reassure the nation shocked by today's terrorist attack. He said an investigation has already begun.
I've directed the full resources of our intelligence and law enforcement communities to find those responsible and to bring them to justice. We will make no distinction between the terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them. I appreciate so very much the members of Congress who have joined me in strongly condemning these attacks. And on behalf of the American people, I thank the many world leaders who have called to offer their condolences and assistance.
President Bush speaking this evening at the White House. Today's events, four hijacked airplanes crashing into centers of finance and the military, constitute the largest act of terrorism ever. Search and rescue efforts will continue in New York and at the Pentagon. Numbers of the dead and injured are not yet available, but police in New York say those numbers will be in the thousands. We'll be following the story throughout the night. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. This is special coverage from NPR News of today's terrorist attacks in New York City and in Washington. In Washington, I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And in New York, I'm Robert Siegel. Today, the United States was hit by the worst terrorist act in history. Four commercial jets were hijacked and crashed into civilian and military targets, two into the World Trade Center in New York City, one into the Pentagon outside Washington, D.C. Another plane crashed in rural Pennsylvania, 80 miles southeast of Pittsburgh. Hundreds of people were aboard the planes that crashed, and the death toll could be in the thousands. Moments ago, President George W. Bush addressed the nation from the White House. He said that after the first attack, he implemented the nation's emergency response plan.
Our first priority is to get help to those who have been injured and to take every precaution to protect our citizens at home and around the world from further attacks. The functions of our government continue without interruption. Federal agencies in Washington, which had to be evacuated today, are reopening for essential personnel tonight and will be open for business tomorrow. Our financial institutions remain strong, and the American economy will be open for business as well. The search is underway for those who are behind these evil acts. I've directed the full resources of our intelligence and law enforcement communities to find those responsible and to bring them to justice. We will make no distinction between the terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them.
President Bush spoke at the White House tonight.
We're joined now by NPR's White House correspondent Don Gagne and our Justice Department correspondent Barbara Bradley. Barbara, let's start with you. What do we know about the investigation that the president has said will be ongoing from this point?
Well, as you just heard, the president said that all of the Justice Department and FBI's and many, many other agencies, actually, all of these resources are going to be deployed. And we are beginning to hear some details. Ashcroft said, Attorney General John Ashcroft said that on one of the planes, the hijackers had knives. Then we know that on another flight, the American Airlines flight that crashed into the Pentagon, we know that the hijackers had knives there. We're beginning to kind of hear little details here and there. But we're going to be seeing a very concerted effort over the next, over the next, obviously, you know, round the clock. But what we're going to be doing is we're going to be hearing a little bit more about details that come out from, for example, cell phones. Several people made cell phone calls, and so the investigators are going to be talking to the people who received those phone calls, listening to them. They're going to be trying to get clues as to who the hijackers were, trying to trace them to Osama bin Laden or whoever they believe that is. So things are just going to be coming out little by little.
At some level, this is about plane crashes, and there's always evidence about what happened to airplanes. Do you think these investigators have any hope of finding the black boxes?
Well, you know, those black boxes are pretty sturdy. They seem to endure quite a bit. I know that they're going to be looking for them. It's interesting. I was talking to someone a little bit earlier today, and what they said is, gee, there is going to be, yes, it looks like they were all burned up, but there is also going to be a lot of evidence, not only evidence at the crime scene, but also evidence in other places. For example, they are going to take all those boarding passes and they will scan them for fingerprints. And somewhere in an international database, there may be the fingerprints of the hijackers. They will be looking for things like that, both at the crime scene and off the crime scene.
Where pilots were trained, where they could have found people who might have been able to fly these aircraft.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, it seems pretty clear that the hijackers were also, at least two on each plane, were also pilots. The reason is no American pilot would fly into the World Trade Center. So that means that these pilots were trained somewhere, and in all likelihood in the United States or in Western Europe, because the simulators that are needed to train those pilots are in those places. What that probably means is that they are certified and that those pilots are on a list somewhere. So what people think is that they're going to focus on the pilots first.
Don Gagne, the president spoke to the nation just a few minutes ago. The thrust of what he said.
It was a balance he was trying to strike, that resolve that the United States, that this country will do what it takes to hunt down these people, to proceed with this investigation that Barbara's describing, and then the reassurance to the American public that even though this was a horrible attack on this country's freedoms, that it cannot be viewed as a setback, that this country will not go into retreat, that the federal government will be functioning tomorrow, that the Congress will be in business tomorrow, that the American economy, he said, will be open for business tomorrow.
The president talked about good and evil when he was discussing these hijackers, and he talked about dealing equally with the people who hijacked these aircraft or who planned the hijackings of these aircraft and those who harbor them, which sounds, I assume, like states that have been hiding or permitting the terrorist activity within their borders.
It was probably the strongest language of the president's remarks tonight, that this is not just individuals we are going after. He seemed to be saying that these people have support, and we will find out who is supporting them. And if that is state support, though he didn't use that word explicitly, then there will be repercussions.
Thanks very much, Don.
Thank you.
NPR's Don Gagne, NPR's Barbara Bradley. Thank you both.
Welcome.
Carrie Nolan is a reporter for member station WNYC, and right now she is in Atlantic Highlands in New Jersey. The harbor there is packed with thousands of people, medical personnel, police, firefighters. Carrie Nolan, I understand that a triage unit has been set up where you are. What's going on there?
Well, right now it looks like medical personnel from practically all over New Jersey have amassed in this very small town on the Sandy Hook Bay. They've set up several tents, triage tents, and they've actually been ferrying people from New York all day long. Mostly this afternoon it's been ambulatory patients who were examined and either treated on the scene or sent to area hospitals. They were also, some of them were sent to decontamination units where they were just hosed down with water to remove asbestos particles that were clinging to their skin and clothing. So this has been sort of an ongoing thing. We're getting word now that more critically injured people are due in on ferry boats probably in about an hour or so.
More
we'll
people,
see what
you
happens
say.
Then. I'm sorry?
More people are still coming in.
Yes, sir. More people are coming in, and they're expected to come in probably for most of the night.
Do the people who are running the triage center give any sense to reporters there whether the people they're treating were actually inside the World Trade Center and managed to get out before the explosion, or might they just as easily have been pedestrians in the area at the time?
This afternoon, it was a little of both. There were people who did get out in time, and there were people who just happened to be caught on the street. At this point, they're not even sure how many more critically injured people are coming in. They've just been amassed in one of the meeting rooms here down at the harbor, and they are some of them are coming out with big boxes of medical equipment. So right now, nobody knows how many people are coming in or how many ferries have been put into work tonight.
But do you get the sense that there actually is an operation at the scene of what were the World Trade Center towers to try to rescue people who might still be alive there?
There is that sense. Everybody's being pretty realistic and not, I don't want to say not holding out too much hope, but just not making any judgments as to who's coming in and where they're coming from. Whether it's, you know, from the building itself. Right now, the hospitals in New York are just overwhelmed. So this seems to be, ferrying people seems to be the most efficacious way of getting people the help they need and to a hospital as quickly as possible.
Well, Carrie, thank you very much for telling
us
about it. Carrie Nolan of member station WNYC reporting to us from the Jersey side of New York Harbor. She's at Atlantic Highlands in New Jersey.
Here in Washington, rescue crews are at work at this hour at the Pentagon. They're looking for survivors from this morning's attacks and starting the grim effort to recover bodies. NPR's Steve Inskeep joins us from the Pentagon. Steve, the latest there?
No, it appears again that perhaps the fire is under control, at least from our vantage point. Officials earlier in the evening declared this fire to be under control. Up, there it goes again. Over the last half hour, however, Noah, the fire has begun bursting through the Pentagon roof again and again, a great distance, in fact, from the place where the plane originally struck. And once again, right now, we are seeing tongues of flame licking up into the sky and smoke continuing to rise from the building. As that happens, more rescuers are arriving. They are bringing what appeared to be cadaver dogs, bringing in cranes. Army troops are coming in, convoy after convoy of people, to try to begin working through that rubble and see what they can find.
Any estimate about how many people may have been killed in that plane crash?
The Associated Press is giving us a number based from a Pentagon official of perhaps 100, but I have to say, I mean, based on any experience from covering disasters, that's got to be a wild guess at this point. The military is trying to get a handle on how many people really were in the building, asking people to call. One thing that may keep the casualty number lower than it might otherwise have been is that we are told that a portion of the building where the plane struck had been recently renovated and not all the offices were filled.
The question occurs today, why didn't somebody try to shoot down that aircraft as it came screaming into the Pentagon?
Well, I think there are maybe two answers to that, although we're speculating a little here. One, eyewitnesses who talked to me said this plane flew in very low, which means you would not see it from miles and miles away. You would have a very short time to react and try to get a missile, a shoulder-fired missile, or whatever the Pentagon and whatever the military may have had on the roof to shoot at that. The second thing is, we heard in the newscast at the top of the hour, Noah, that the transponders on these planes were shut off. The transponder is a device on the plane that communicates with the ground, makes it easier to find it on the radar, which means that any early warning radar, any military or civilian radar, would have had great difficulty tracking that plane and getting an early sense that it was heading someplace that it should not have gone.
And at this hour, this evening, what is the military response to this day?
General Hugh Shelton told us, your armed forces are ready. And I think that's the bottom line. Officials made it clear to us that either they do not know yet or are not willing to say yet who they think is responsible for this, but they are prepared, I would presume, to respond with maximum force. Not only, as we heard from Don Gagne, against the terrorists, if they can be found, but any nation that may have helped them.
Thank you, Steve.
Happy to help.
NPR's Steve Inskeep talking with us from the Pentagon. You're listening to special coverage of today's terrorist attacks from NPR News.